The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host for the House of Hardcore podcast, Tommy Dreamer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the House of Hardcore podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Dreamer. And this week, I got my good friend and Memphis royalty, Wolfie D. How the hell are you?
Memphis royalty. I love that, man. Thank you so much, man. I'm good, Tommy, man. I just got back from the doctor, had my first epidural injection into my lower back because I am effed up, bro.
Well, it's because you were a bumping machine, and we'll get into all that bumping machine. But the first question I ask everybody, what got you hooked in this wonderful world of professional wrestling?
Bro, I was about 8 years old, man. And my mom met her husband that, you know, they died together, man. And he was a huge wrestling fan. And I don't know. It's funny. When I think back about this, I don't know that I had even knew wrestling existed before this. So at about 8 years old, he comes into our lives and he loves wrestling. And I lived in Nashville. So what we got on Saturday mornings was Memphis TV. And he would watch it, and I started watching it with him, and I just immediately fell in love with it, man. Just immediately.
Did you have a guy?
As far as like when I got in the business?
Well, no, like I'm saying, like my guy was Dusty Rhodes. He was my favorite.
I thought you said guide, but you said guy. Well, there was a few, man. And I say these people are the ones that made me want to be a wrestler. Hawk and Animal, Kurt Hennig, Randy Savage.
Wow. But, I mean, you saw them later on. I mean, Savage was in Memphis. Did you see him, like, first?
I saw him on Memphis. That was the first time I had seen him, yeah. And so then when he went to New York and everything, that was awesome to me. But there was a funny time because I was more of a WCW guy, man. I liked it a lot better because me and my friend that was like my wrestling buddy or whatever, we even back then, so you got this is the 80s, the mid-80s, early mid-80s, and we called it selling your soul. If our guys went to WWF, we called it selling their souls, but I still liked it when, you know, Randy went there. Cause obviously, you know, the him and Steamboat match and all that kind of stuff, man. I mean, that was where he really did his shit, but he was so fucking like, he was even more hardcore on Memphis TV and IWA. You know what I mean? But yeah. he was one of a kind, man. And I don't think, honestly, you know, you hear people talk about the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, and you know, they always say Flair, but man, Randy Savage deserves to be in there, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you say that. Even at that age, me too, and we're around the same age. I always, like, when a guy's went to WWE, you beat like Dusty and the Polka Dots, but it'd be like, no way, that's not the real Dusty. The real guy is when they were in NWA.
Right.
We were fans, we were marks, but it was also the NWA was presented more as a wrestling company as opposed to WWF was glitz and glamour and sports entertainment.
Yeah. And then you said Dusty and the Polka Dots. Yeah, I hated that too. But and then also it made me think of Lawler. Lawler goes up there and he's basically a commentator, and the fucking strap means nothing when I'm accustomed to that. If Lawler is walking down a street in Memphis to this day, and he pulls his strap down, the general public is going to take off running.
He's going to beat up everybody in his path.
Yeah.
We still believe. Yeah. So how do you get started in your path to become a wrestler? Because the business was, is of course, it's not like you go look up wrestling schools online. So
Right. My stepdad and a guy named Rick Reynolds, they met. My stepdad knew Len Rossi. Okay. And I'm not sure if this led into my stepdad knowing Gypsy Joe or not, but my stepdad and Rick started going to a ring out in West Nashville. It was in a barn that one side of it was uncovered. The ring had no canvas, just the carpet, and the ropes were garden hoses. Okay. So it stunk like cat piss. All right. But anyway, they start going to see Gypsy and training with Gypsy. And then I'm 15. I find out they're going and I'm like, please take me, please. So they did. And I got in there with Joe, man. And like, honestly, Dreamer, man, it's like everything he would show me, I would get it like that. And it's because, you know, I watched it so much. But then you remember the forehead VCR?
Mm-hmm.
That was like a royalty back then. You know what I mean? And I watched everything in fucking slow motion, man. I rewound and watched everything in slow motion. So anyway, I caught on pretty quick, man. And then, man, I didn't train with him probably a month and a half or something like that before they threw me in the ring. So
at 15 years old.
Yep. Actually, I think by the time I got in the ring, because my birthday's in December, I started training like right at the end of the year. And I think I was in the ring when my birthday turned, Pearl Harbor Day, December the 7th. I think I turned 16. Yeah.
Wow, wow, wow. And you're probably doing what Tracy Smothers would call outlaws.
Oh, it was terrible outlaws. The first place I ever wrestled was Winchester, Tennessee. So you can look that up in the population, and there was probably 50 people there. I had a mask on because they didn't want nobody to know that I was so young or whatever. I mean, looking back, it's like, who gives a fuck? But I don't know. That's what they thought. And so I wore a mask and I was called, you remember the show, you know, my real last name is Wolf. And because I was 15, I played sports. I liked basketball. I could jump. So I was called Airwolf.
Nice. So Gypsy Joe is the one who trained you. Tough son of a bitch.
Yeah. Oh, my God, man. Love him to death. He was so... A lot of people, man, he was my third match, believe it or not. You'd think he would be my first one since, you know, he trained me or whatever, but he wasn't. Rick, the other guy I was talking about, he was my first match, but Joe was my third. And the week before that, Joe had a beef with this guy that was running the town.
Of course he did.
He was...
I love it.
I watched him beat the absolute dog shit out of this dude. I'm talking about taking him out of the ring and putting him in places where, you know, if it was like, this is what we're supposed to do, you would stay out in front of the fans. He was taking him in rooms in this building where there was paint, dumping paint on him. And I'm just fucking killing this guy. So I got to work him the next week. And everybody's like, of course they marked out, you know, and it kind of was a shoot, but everybody's like, oh, fuck, you know, and me, I got to work him next week. I hope he don't get mad at me.
So, you're 16 years old. I can't even comprehend that.
Exactly. Exactly. Look, but I'll tell you this, man. You know, Joe was known for his chops and stuff, right? He fucking backs me in the corner. This is, you know, pretty much right off the get-go. Backs me into the corner, licks his fingers. He says, don't worry, kid. And forearms me in the chest instead of chopping me. He didn't give me a chop the whole fucking match, man. Nice. He called, nobody does anymore, flying head scissors. You know what I'm saying? And at this time, God, man, this was, like I said, 1989. Joe died at what, 70 something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you think of how old he was then. I mean, he was old then. And he was working with me because he liked me. He knew that I got it. You know what I mean?
Wow. Quick story. I remember Taz wanting to go to New Japan and his first opponent, and like he wants it through all his suplexes, all that stuff, is Gypsy Joe. And we're from New York. We have no clue who he is. And we see this picture of Gypsy Joe.
Yeah.
And he looked like an old bag of dirt. And Taz is like, bro, they put me in the ring with this old guy. Like, how's this guy going to take my suplexes? And I remember him hitting me up. And he's like, dude, that old man beat me up. And he's like, I dumped him on his head. And he kept telling me, do it more. He loved working with me. And he goes, I was hitting him as hard as I could. And then he hit me back. He broke Taz's eardrum. And he was like, he beat me up, bro. He's the toughest guy ever. Nothing but respect. And, I hit it off
hitting
with Joe.
Hitting him. He's one of those dudes. I swear, when you hit him, like if you chop him or whatever, it's like hitting a tree. Even at that age, man, he was just like that, man. And I know you've seen the fucking where him and New Jack got into it. I know you've seen that. And like I said, Joe trained me. So and I like New Jack. But at the same time, I was kind of hot at Jack for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, damn, here's the deal. If you talk about tough, he got legit hit with a baseball bat with barbed wire twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And got up.
Yeah.
He just got up and was like, walk to the back. When a guy is trying to physically probably kill him, one, two, Jack stops. People are trying to break it up. Whatever happens, Joe just gets up and walks to the back.
Exactly.
Like, holy crap. That was it was a hard watch. And then I'm like, could you imagine?
Can you imagine? And I've said this 100 times, man, about him. Okay. When I'm speaking this, I speak about him. Because, and I started saying this back when he was fucking his 60s or whatever. Can you imagine? I mean, that's like your grandpa or your friend's grandpa or your girl's grandpa, whatever. Pick your grandpa up and fucking give him a body slam.
Yep.
What's going to happen? He's going to the ER. You know what I'm saying? And then you think about stuff like what you just said, that beating he took, but just, and I know how I feel right now at 48, just the fucking body slam is like, ow.
As we get older, dude, I have moments like that. Like I'll wrestle and I'll think of what Terry Funk did for us in ECW.
Yeah.
Like, he's 55 doing a moonsault to the floor.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like, how did he feel the next day? How did he feel getting on a plane the next day?
Absolutely, man.
I wrestled him when he was in his 60s, dude. And he hit me the hardest I ever been hit. And I was just like, okay. And I'm hitting him back as hard as I can. And my hand is hurting. And I'm like, and it's so funny you said that. Cause I was like, I feel like I'm fighting my grandfather and I'm having a hard time fighting my grandfather. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
bad grandpa.
Your first break is Memphis.
Yeah.
How did that first feel for you, for being a kid growing up, watching it to, you know, you're how old when you get into Memphis?
18, I think, or 19, maybe. Man, I cannot tell you. Like, okay, yeah, I had a little run in WWE. I had a little run in WCW. You guys, blah, blah, blah. But, man, Memphis, it gives me cold chills right now just saying it.
Yep.
Being in the Mid-South Coliseum. Okay, so in Nashville, when they would show Memphis wrestling, right, the clips, and you know how the deal worked. It was TV on Saturday, which everywhere except Memphis, it was a week later. Okay, so you had to do the loop, but you did Tuesday through Friday was what was on last week's TV. Anyway, when they would show the clips from the matches, they would show the Mid-South Coliseum. You never got to see the fairgrounds, which was in Nashville, but the fairgrounds was where I went to watch it. Okay. Being in that building for the first time was probably, it just felt like home. It just felt that way to me, man. That was my home. And to be able to main event it on a number of times, but also the Mid-South Coliseum, being there, having seen that on TV, and going back into what you said, I'm going to address how that came to be was Jeff Jarrett was on. So I started doing Wolfie D by myself. I was Airwolf. And then I came up with this idea kind of from Chris Champion. He was kind of like one of my mentors, man. And he was doing this like Ugly Kid Joe gimmick in the early, like 91, I think. And he was just doing it on the independent stuff. And me and him were good friends, man. And so I developed, because he was wearing shorts, a flannel, you know, the whole 90s ugly kid Joe gimmick. So then I got the idea, because I was a huge 80s rap fan, NWA, Eazy-E, all that stuff, right? So I put on some shorts, I graffitied them, and then I was Sir Wolfie D, Sir Mix-a-Lot, my name, and Heavy D, right? So anyway, that's how that came about. Well, then Chris goes, hey, you dudes should do this as a tag team. Me and Jamie were wrestling against each other on some of these Kentucky towns. That's where I met Jamie. And so we did. So JC Ice, Wolfie D. And then I'm on the shitter, honestly, coming up with a name for this tag team. The Hip Hop Express, I had it wrote down in this little notebook. And if you'll remember, were you an NWA fan of the rappers? Okay, so you remember Parental Discretion is Advised for the Moment. That song was the inspiration for me to come up with PG-13. I thought, there's no tag team that has just, it's like a long word and name, not a, you know, two letters and two numbers. So anyway, I thought that was catchy. I liked it. And that's where we did that. So Jeff Jarrett is at a Outlaw show in Beaver Dam, Kentucky. And me and Jamie wrestled Brickhouse Brown. And I can't remember whether it was Pez Watley, because he was there sometimes too. Or anyway, tag team match. And Jamie says to Jeff, because Jamie has history with Jeff. I don't know Jeff. I just met him. Jamie has the old VCR camera. And he looks at Jeff, hands it to him. And he says, hey, man, record this match and take it to your old man. And Jeff fucking did it. And you knowing Jeff and me knowing Jeff, that's awesome. Yes. So Jeff stands outside the curtain there and fucking videotapes our match. Takes it to his dad. His dad calls Jamie, I don't know, a week or so later. And we go up to the mansion. You've heard of the mansion on the hill in Hendersonville, right? Where the office was. So we drive up there. We're supposed to meeting at such and such a time or whatever day this was. Well, we drive up. We call him. Hey, we're out here. He says, boys, I'm sick. I'm not going to be able to do it today. Fuck. Fuck. We just drove out of Hendersonville. He postpones us for a week. Go back up there. We call him. Hey, Jerry, we're here. Still a little sick, but come on in. Jamie looks at me and he says, if we make him laugh, we got a job. Okay. So we walk in, we got our bags because we got our shit, you know, in the thing, in our bags. And so we sat down there and start talking to him. He's got a big red ass nose. He's wiping his with the Kleenex and whatnot. I mean, he is sick. He says, so let me see this gimmick I've been hearing about. So me and Jamie go out of his office into this little room that's right off his out of his office, put our shorts on. Put the whole shit on, hubcap around the neck, come out. He goes, and that's when I was like, Jamie was right. We made him laugh and we did get a job. So
I'm popping not alone because your partner, because I know him, you know, very, very well, that he tells Jeff to hold the camera. Like, bravado, that is. Let me ask you, though, like, did at this time, like, his father have heat with Jerry? Because why wouldn't he just tell his father, hey, make this happen?
I don't think it was that. I don't think it was, hey, make this happen. He just handed it to him. And I don't know, because I've never asked Jeff this question. I just saw him the other day. He did deliver the tape, and I don't know what was said, but Jerry.
No, I'm not talking Jeff. I'm talking Jamie. Why didn't Jamie go to his dad, Bill?
Because Bill was kind of blocking us, man. Okay. Trying to, honestly, and people will tell you, man, Bill in those days, early 90s, in the 80s, and probably the 70s, even worse. But with age, you know how the guys do, man. They get older and they become nicer. Even the guys that have been known for being dickheads, right?
Right.
So absolutely, Bill was trying to block us because he knew that we could get over. And that's the old school guy in him going, I don't want him taking my spot. You've heard the knife story. The motherfucker pulled a knife on me once.
Well, we'll tell that story later. So, hey there, auto mechanics and super cool do-it-yourself guys who work on their own cars. I want to tell you about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best prices. This is your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. Rockauto.com has been in business for 20 years, and they make it easy to find parts you need at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order your parts, aren't really sure what you're looking for, and then after all that hassle, they will still charge you storefront markups. At rockauto.com, you can easily find everything you need, and whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or working on your own car, everyone has access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. So if you're a car guy, right now, go to rockauto.com and check out all the parts available for your car. You're going to have so much fun looking at car parts. So once more, go to rockauto.com. No promo code needed, as their pricing is already that good. When you order, make sure you tell rockauto.com that you heard about them here on the House of Hardcore podcast. Rockauto.com. Let's get back into it. Okay, so now you get the ball going. And for those of you listening, I don't know if you've ever seen PG-13, beyond entertaining, ECW was a different mix. Same with WCW. But the real, like we're talking about, the real wrestling is you guys in Memphis. You know, this is wrestlers' angles that is now going to feed themselves, feed their families. You have to have good wrestling, great angles, so the houses are up, so you make your money.
And you make a weekly paycheck. It's just like a real job.
But you guys did it. And some of your stuff is ahead of its time. Also Thank controversial. You. But I mean, I knew about you guys and I wasn't getting Memphis television then, but it was always this buzz. And you talk about that look. You know, I remember the first time meeting Jamie and like that look. He didn't have a good body. He was short. But like, looking at those pictures, you think this guy's a tough, badass, you know, dude.
Right. Right.
And not saying he isn't, but it was just like, then you meet him and I was like, whoa. Then
you meet him
and you like him even more just because he's Jamie.
So it's
just, you guys did a lot. Do you have like a favorite moment or a favorite angle like throughout your career in Memphis?
Because while you were talking and saying those things, it reminded me of something you said to me that, has always stuck in my head. And like, I really appreciated it is, you came up to me and Jamie, and I can't remember like when we first came in or whatever, I don't remember what time period it was when we were up there, but you came to me and you said, or to us, and you said, you know what, man, out of everybody on the roster, you guys look like wrestlers. And I took that in, man. And I really appreciated that. And if I've never told you, thank you.
No, I never did. That is cool.
A very nice comment. Okay. So back to that. What was the actual question?
I'm even looking at you now. You look
favorite.
What I'm saying besides that too, that comes because you guys working the towns, working 7 days a week, you're not just going to be wrestling in sweatpants and all. Like, even now I'm looking at you, you're almost 50 years old. You look like you're somebody. You got the bald head, you got glasses, you got the tattoo. You look like you're a wrestler. When you guys walk into a town or go into a bar, hey, you're on television. People know this, that's where you're literally living your gimmick 24/7.
Yeah. And that's what I was always told to do. And when I was Wolfie D, man, that was me, man. And you know this, man, the guys that get over are the ones that just kind of live their gimmick. It's just an extension of themselves. And Wolfie D was actually me. And then when I did Slash, that was bad for me to live that gimmick. But at any rate, man.
I said your favorite moment in Memphis.
Okay, favorite moment. Moment. Or angle or time period. All right. I'll say,
we drew
a lot of money. That's not a term that's used anymore, but we drew money when we started working Tommy Rich, Doug Gilbert, and that drew money. Then we went on to the Rock and Roll Express where they did the Smoky Mountain Invade USWA angle. And we kept adding people, Tracy Smothers, Buddy Landell, Terry Gordy, the Heavenly Bodies. We kept adding people. And by the end of that, man, that it exploded, and we could not, quite frankly, that was the last big hurrah in Memphis before the final territory got took under, you know what I mean? And I feel so honored to be a part of that, because when I started there in 93, they were about to go out of business. Jerry Jarrett brought us in, like I said, and we were undercard ha-ha guys, right? Well, we left, we went to Mexico, we came back. Randy Hales was the booker at this point and gave us the push. And the houses all came up, kept them in business. I mean, houses came up dramatically. We also had a little help with WWF because they were sending guys in to work with Lawler and stuff like that. But me, Jamie, Brian Lawler, Tommy Rich, Doug Gilbert, Billy Jack Haynes, we had a good crew, man. And we brought the houses up. And so that was awesome. So I think the USWA Smoky Mountain thing was one of my greatest memories. Are they the greatest matches I've ever had? No. And you probably know this. I bet you've had probably your greatest match is probably not even on tape, is it?
Yeah. I always say me and Christian at a house show for the ECW title in friggin' Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Where we didn't even put together the match. Everything called out there. We went like 25 minutes and I was just like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. So there's things that people say, who is your greatest opponent? Who? Duh, duh, duh. It's different for every situation, right? Who'd you draw money with? Who'd you just have a good match with? You know, and then who do you like to work type thing? So I can never answer that question of who is the best person you ever worked. You know what I mean?
I don't remember Billy Jack Haynes being
there. You don't remember Billy Jack Haynes, WrestleMania 3 versus Hercules?
I know Billy Jack Haynes.
Oh.
You're talking Billy. You said Billy Jack Haynes. Are you talking Billy Joe Travis?
Nope. I'm talking Billy Jack Haynes. He was in USWA. Yeah, for a little bit.
Wow. I don't remember this.
I think it was like 95, 96. He worked an angle with Brian Lawler.
Nice. I have to now look this up. You have given me something to go down the YouTube wormhole tonight.
Yeah, it's there, man. I forget. It was a trophy, man, about fucking 3 to 4 foot tall that on the top of it had the little gimmick with the wings. And that was the start of the angle. And I never forget fucking Billy fucking hit Brian with that thing like a goddamn sword. Fucking broke the wing gimmick off, but the wing fucking cut Brian all up like a motherfucker, man. Nice. That's what started the angle. And then, one of my favorite matches as a child was Billy Jack Hercules, WrestleMania 3. One of my favorite matches as a kid. I watch it back now. It's still good, though. And then meeting him, and you've met him, I'm sure.
No, I've never met him.
No bullshit. His laugh. Okay. You know how Billy looks. Right. I mean, fuck, I remember as a kid that he was, wrestling sexiest man in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. But then you meet him and he talks and talks and he goes, that's exactly how he laughs. And I thought that was the strangest thing ever. And now that I see him like on some of these YouTube gimmicks, man, he's lost his mind. And it's comical to me.
Most of us do. Yeah. How do you get to the WWE?
First,
a lot of people don't know that you're part of one of the bigger acts is the nation.
Yeah, yeah. But before that, we actually went up. Lawler got us a shot on Raw, and it was back when they taped two shows a night. Mm-hmm. First show, we have an interview, and we have some job guys, and we get a win with our finish. Next show, we wrestle the Smoking Guns for the titles. 2-segment match, get beat. Still have an interview and stuff. And I'll tell you something pretty cool about that, man. I think you'll appreciate this. We go up there, and they're pre-recording our interviews, right? They've got all this shit written out on a fucking teleprompter. Dude, this was the first time I'd ever been in front of a teleprompter in my life. You know what I'm saying? You know, Memphis is live TV and you go. So we tried it. It was like for two takes. And me and Jamie, you know this, but we never one take guys, man. So we try it for like two takes. And then we look at it and we said, listen, this is not what we would say. And not the way we would say it. Can you tell us exactly, you know, give us a couple of points here that you want us to talk about, or, you know, what do you want to get across, and let us do it our own way? And they're like, okay, all right, let's do it. So fucking first take, boom. And if you watch it, it's called 1995 PG-13 debut. It's on YouTube. But anyway, we nail it. And they start clapping. And it's just like, really? I mean, this is what you're supposed to do.
Every day.
Yeah, this is what you're supposed to do. So anyway, we do that. We have those matches. So what I understand, and here's a little bit of story. Pritchard liked us. They all liked us. They loved the work. They loved the interview. But at that time, we were too small. Nowadays, we'd be monsters. I met some of those AEW guys over the weekend. It's like, I was too small. But anyway, that was the deal. And that's why we didn't get the job right then. Cornette was the one that got us the Nation of Domination deal. We were supposed to break off into a tag team after that concluded, but we self-destructed ourselves. I'll leave it at that.
Jamie had told me, well, awesome story. You guys flew into somewhere. I want to say either New York or Hartford, but the show was in Boston area.
And I know where you're going.
And you
decided, I know where you're going,
to take a cab?
No. That's a little bit off. Okay. So this is what happened. And you got to lead up to this. Him, at one point in time, Tommy, me and Jamie were working for Memphis, ECW, and WWF all at the same time. Wow. We would just do Mondays for WWF or Sundays if there was a pay-per-view. Monday through Thursday, USWA. Friday, Saturday, we come up there and work with you guys most weeks. So he's up all night. He misses his flight into Boston. And we're in, how do you say it? Worcester?
Worcester, yes.
Yes. So think about how much a cab ride from the airport to Worcester cost, right? So Jamie misses his flight. He takes a cab. Dude, it's like fucking 5 o'clock before he ever shows up at the building. Hands the receipt to Jim Ross and says, tell Vince, take care of this.
Yeah, so that was about it.
So then he passes out in the dressing room. Our music's playing. The Nation's getting ready to go to the ring. You know, we did that rap live. I go to find him, and he's in the dressing room, passed out, and Davey Boy and Owen had put fucking shaving cream all over him. So I had to pick him up, music's playing, had to pick him up, put him in the shower, rinse him off, and basically carry him to the ring and rap by myself.
Wow.
So that was the story.
And I remember him telling me, it's hit when they were like, we're not going to pay this. And it says, you said in my contract, and he goes, and I have my contract here, that it says you have to pay my transportation to the event. And
I can tell you, he didn't get that money, I promise you.
And I was, there goes the Nation of Domination run.
Right. Squashed by the Road Warriors the next week.
All right. So then WWE, ECW, now you're kind of, you and Jamie kind of go your separate ways.
Yeah.
And then we have you alone and this thing called TNA starts. It's also in your backyard. And so you have another run in the business.
Yeah.
In TNA.
Yeah. Jeff made me sign a thing of silence when he first came up with that idea. I actually, because I'm good at graphic design, or I used to be, I really don't mess with it no more, but I'm a good artist. And I was actually making the tickets, the paper for those events when they first started. I was on the first show, you know, he called me about it and everything. But the actual run because and me and Jeff are cool. Like I said, I mean, he gave us our first break, him and his daddy. And then this was him and his daddy again, give me another little run. But Jeff has always thought of me as a carpenter. You know what I mean? He's never really thought of me as, I don't think, I mean, he might say different, but I just think he's always thought of me as not the person that could get over, or, you know, right, get to that level or whatever like that. So the thing was, at first it was me, Jim Mitchell, it was me and Jim Mitchell the whole time. But then they kept giving me different partners because of whatever reason. To me, that was a compliment. Hey, this tag team wrestler, and fuck, he just needs somebody that can help him here. You know what I mean? And so it was Sin. It was Brian Lee. And Brian Lee was the one that me and him clicked. We clicked almost on a level of me and Jamie, but it was very close. It was very close. Me and Brian clicked. And they were going to put the titles on us against James Storm, whom I trained, and Chris Harris, America's Most Wanted. They were going to put the titles on us just for like a week and take them right back. But they saw something there and it started working. So we kind of went in and out for a little bit. And then they had us do, the people kept chanting evil, evil. We were heels, but they were starting to get with us. That's about the time that Russo came in. I don't think he knew what to do with us. They're chanting evil, your heels. Okay, let's make a baby face and wrestle Raven and Mike Awesome and all the ECW guys for this, invasion thing or whatever. And that worked for a little bit. But in 2004, when they went to Orlando, my contract up until that point was, we're going to guarantee you this amount of dates at this amount of money. By the end of 2004, when they were going to Orlando, they had not honored all of my dates. So I said, hey, I'm going to need this little bit of money, Yobi, right here. And so that caused a little problem, maybe even with me and Jeff. But like I said, I just saw him the other day and we're cool as cucumbers. But I told him, I said, man, if you don't give me my money, I'm fucking getting a lawyer. You know what I mean? I had to go that route with it. So I think after that is why I didn't go with him. And it got bigger after Nashville. And they brought me and Sin in for one of those one night only pay-per-views. And I fucking hated it. Oh, I'm on pay-per-view trying. Al Snow calls me. He says, Wolfie, we're doing a reunion type thing. You and Sin, can you be here? And it was like, I think it was like 4 to 6 weeks out. And I was fucking hurt, man. I don't remember what happened, but I was fucking hurt. I was literally in the bed when he called me. And I said, Al, I said, I'm beat the fuck up, man. I said, I don't think I can be ready by then. And okay, we hang up. Well, I sat there and I thought, you know what? This is going to probably be my last fucking shot at something. You know what I mean? This was like 2013. And I said, this is probably my last shot. So I called him back. I said, Al, I'll fucking be there. Are you sure? I said, yes, I'm sure. So I fucking like two a days at the gym and everything. We get there, man. And we work LAX. What's their names? Hernandez
and Homicide.
Homicide. Yes. And Homicide can work. Homicide's old school. He can work. Man, we didn't talk to them. And I could just feel this vibe at that year in that company was just, ugh. You know what I mean? I'm there like, hey, I'm going to try to open some eyes and get my job back. These guys didn't give a fuck. I didn't talk to them, swear to God, till about 20 minutes before we went to the ring on pay-per-view. So it's not what I wanted, but whatever. That's how that worked out.
I remember seeing you on an indie. We're friends. We're also like, man, you're in good shape. I remember how hard you were working. And I booked you on my show for House Hardcore. You tore your tricep.
Yeah, that was.
You literally tore your tricep the night before.
Oh, because I tore this one partially.
Right.
This one, I don't know if you can see the scar, but I actually had to have surgery. There's no way that I did, because this was 2016. I tore this completely off the bone doing a fucking Fez press.
I was going to say you got hit with a bunch of injuries later on in your career.
Yeah.
The best part about you when I had seen you, you were like, you know, different person. And I mean, you're clean and sober. You, you really embraced your sobriety and you were really, really, you know, talking heavy about that stuff, getting your act together. Unfortunately, right. You had a few injuries, but I mean, you're a lot of our friends are no longer with us because they
right.
that stuff. So, I mean, that's important for anybody, because as you get older,
did you know I had a heart attack last year?
No.
Yeah, man. I was, me and my girl were going to Gatlinburg. We didn't have the kids for the weekend, so we're going to go to Gatlinburg. I live in Somerset, Kentucky now, about a two and a half hour drive, something like that. In going that way, because I have to, that's where I picked my son up at, on the way to Gatlinburg. He lives in Maryville and me and his mother meet halfway. So I go this route a lot. There's a liquor store and it's called, it's in like in wood. And it says, it's like, it looks like a log cabin. It says Stone Cold Liquor Store. So I keep telling my girl, and my girl wrestled a little bit independent wise. And I said, we have got to stop here one day and do a little skit in front of it. So this day it was sunny, because usually it was like raining or snowing or something every time we went by it. Well, we stop. And so we do this little skit. I get a Bang energy drink, put it in a paper sack like it's a beer. And we do it in front of the sign. And I'm look, hell yeah. It's the Stone Cold Liquor Store, blah, 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 blah. And then she walks into the scene. You're not supposed to be fucking drinking. We got to drive. We're going to Gatlinburg. Last time I checked, you wasn't my mom. You were my girlfriend. And then she kicks me, gives me the fucking stunner. I take a big bump. Spit the shit out, right? All right. So get back in the car, headed to Gatlinburg. I start having these pains. Like, it felt like gas. That's what I thought it was. Get on down the road, man, probably about 30 minutes. And I said, baby, I'm going to pull over at this gas station. I said, go in there and get me some gas pills. Pull over. She goes in. I get out the car, man, because all of a sudden I just start sweating. And I get out of the car, put my hands on the roof and just kind of lean over. All of a sudden I got dizzy. And, bro, I took the fucking flare bump. Boom. Right in the parking lot of this gas station, man, busted my head all up. I did not have to be resuscitated. I got up myself. There was like probably six people around me. Two of them were EMTs and a nurse, EMT and a nurse. So they're people are running there, getting me aspirin and blah, blah, blah. They call the ambulance. My girl don't know really where we are. So it was kind of a thing trying to get them there. But dude, it felt like somebody was stabbing me in the heart with a fucking screwdriver, man. I just leaned up against my back tire, my rear back tire, while the ambulance came. Scary as shit. Once I got in the ambulance, I felt safer just because I knew they could probably save me. You know what I mean? Yep. And they took me to Knoxville. We were about 20 minutes outside of Knoxville, to the hospital, straight into surgery, put two stents in my heart, and that shit hurt like a motherfucker. And yeah, that's what happened.
Wow. I didn't know any of that. Well, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, man.
I'm glad life is okay for you.
Yeah.
We are
it's
still
tolerable.
Yeah. You also have a podcast, correct?
I do. It is on any platform that you listen to podcasts live and in color with Wolfie D. My co-host is Jimmy Street. Man, we do pretty good. You know, talk about a lot of Memphis, but I also have a lot of guests on too. Trying
how
to get
do we find you
on
social media.
You can go to my personal website, but it's loaded up. So getting to be a friend is like a waiting list of people delete themselves or whatever. But that's at Warren Wolf, and then Wolfie D. Obviously, I have a Facebook on there. Live and in Color with Wolfie D has a Facebook, and then on Twitter. Live, I forget what he put it as, Live in Color Wolfie D, something on Twitter and Instagram and all that shit.
Well, I think it's going to have to be a part two, because I wanted to talk more about like Bill Dundee pulling a knife on you, you know, some other good stuff, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. So we'll definitely have to get a part two of this. Plus I have to come on your show and do your podcast. Yeah. So it's, I'm going to end it here with, I'm happy you're clean and sober. I'm happy we're alive and well, and we're not doing our thing that we used to do, but we're still doing our thing. And that's being alive and, you know, just enjoying life and kids and all that stuff. Normal stuff.
Who'd you ever be, Tommy?
Never. I'm still trying to get It was good seeing you, buddy.
Hey, you too, buddy. Thank you.
I'll talk to you.